The Senate will come to order. Will everyone in the Senate and in the upper galleries please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, the Reverend Gout, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 42nd Psalm we hear, as the deer longs for the water brooks, so longs my soul for you, O Lord. O Lord, we are completing this next to last week. We do so knowing that you have helped us all along the way, and for which we give you thanks and praise. We pray that we may be with you as we travel to be with family and loved ones, and be found in your house of prayer this weekend. We do so needing your refreshing presence in our lives, so we may be ready for whatever we face in the days ahead. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lavoda, Libla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Riddle, Romine, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schatz, Schmidt, Shoup, Sipton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from 7th, Senator from Butler. A quorum is present on the Senator from 23rd's birthday. The Senator from Callaway is also here. Quorum is present. The Senate is now in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 65th day, Thursday, May
Senator
7th.
From Newton.
Present. I move the further reading of the journal be dispensed with. Same approval on the further reading.
You have heard the motion. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third reading. I should call the calendar.
House bills on third reading. Everything's in fiscal oversight down to Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, would you please place that bill on the informal calendar?
We need the bill number.
Was it 427?
457.
House Bill 457, yeah.
So ordered on the informal.
Okay.
On the informal calendar, please. Okay, you want to mark them?
Here we go.
Senator?
Mr. President, would you please send Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1066 and House Committee Substitute for House Bill 444 to the Government Accountability and Fiscal Oversight Committee.
So ordered. Senator from Green, I do not see in the chamber. Senator from Green? Senator from Green? House Bill 996?
Mr. President, would you please place House Bill 996 on the informal
calendar? So ordered. House Bill 875, Senator from Franklin. We'll roll.
Mr. President, please place 875 on the
informal calendar. So ordered. House Bill 1076, Senator from Barton.
That bill on the informal calendar.
So ordered. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 671 et al., Senator from Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will you please place that on the informal calendar?
So ordered. House Committee Substitute for House Bill 84, Senator from Christian.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay that bill on the informal calendar?
So ordered. What? No. I called it. I called it. I did not miss it. Senator from Newton.
Did the Secretary say we missed anything on that calendar? 10:30, did you miss 10:39 or?
I didn't call a bill. I called the Senator from Andrew.
But I think he has two of them, doesn't he?
Okay. Senator from Newton, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 671 et al., There is no Senate sponsor.
Okay, let's lay that on the formal calendar.
So ordered. Senator from Andrew, House Bill 1039.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please place that on the informal calendar?
So ordered. Senator from Newton.
And are we, would you, Mr. President, on 444 and 1066, are they?
They have been referred pursuant to the request of the Senator from 23rd.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Mr. President.
We still have one, the Senator from Christian, House Bill 844.
Would you please place that bill on the informal calendar?
So ordered. Now, Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Objection. I ask you to recognize the Senator from the 8th for a privileged motion on Senate Bill 115.
Senator from the 8th, sir.
Mr. President, I have a privileged motion.
State your privileged motion.
Mr. President, I move that conference committee report for Senate Bill 115 be adopted. Brought before the body.
Those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The matter is before us.
Now, Mr. President, I move to adopt the conference committee report for Senate Bill 115. Senate Bill 115 went to conference. We had 20-some items on it or so. We've got it down to a reasonable amount. I think the fiscal note is well underneath, well, right around $500 million after the 3 year phase in. So the number of things that are in here are important to a number of representatives and senators in here. I'll try to go through them quickly. The base bill is the refund for your income tax. If you remember, we heard this way back when, and we had a statute of limitations of being able to go after and get a refund beyond 3 years, but yet the Department of Revenue could collect your taxes that are due, but if they opened them up, you couldn't get a refund. We thought that was unfair. We thought if the Department of Revenue or IRS opened up your tax return, you should be allowed a refund. So that's the base bill. The first section, I sent out a spreadsheet, so you should be able to have that spreadsheet that talks about the different sections and what's in the different sections. The first one on that list talked about House Bill 502, and this is the quarterly filings. It increases the amount for those quarterly filings. So if a business is small and they're not reaching that threshold, they wouldn't have to do quarterly filings. Reduces the burden on small businesses. The next one, we've talked about several on here, but we talked about this one. This is the adding the calculator, the graphic calculator, to the sales tax holiday for school supplies. We passed that last year, and it's been on the floor already this year once. The next one, the senator from Andrew has talked about this. This is House Bill 613. It is abolishing townships and how to deal with their taxation. The next one on here was Representative Butler in the House dealing with bed and breakfasts and how they were going to be done on property taxes. We want to make sure that they stay on the residential side. I think there's been an effort to move them to the commercial side and raise more revenue for the locals based on that. But these are mainly small bed and breakfasts, four rooms or less. We've talked about the exemption for stillbirths. The senator from Barton had that. Last year we passed a bill dealing with audits of TDDs. That's Representative Faust's bill, House Bill 777. It was vetoed last year because of some immunity language. That language has been removed. And so that we've talked about. The next one, talk about property tax exemption for short-term rentals. This was the senator from Capes that we talked about earlier. The next one deals with valuing of property that are rent subsidized. This was in House Bill 613 that was passed by a senator from Polk just the other night. The next one deals with exemption for short-term rental equipment. It was in House Bill 616 that we passed out of this body and is truly agreed on the governor's desk. Short-term, shortening the time. So if you get a tax, the next one dealing with tax refunds, if you don't get it in the 45 days when you file your filing, your return, your due interest, that's shortening it from 90 to 45. That was Senator from Boone has had that on the floor, I believe. Income tax refund for deposits into the most account. I believe the senator from 15th has had that, but I know it's in House Bill 1060. And then the last one is a pretty big one, but it was we discussed it just the other night. The collectors in delinquent property taxes. That was in House Bill 613 that we passed out of this body from the senator from Polk. That is what's in the conference committee report. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions.
Senator from the 5th. Does the senator from the 8th yield? Proceed.
Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm good, Senator. How are you?
I was sitting here reading a couple of other bills while you were talking, so if you can just bear with me here and kind of run through approximately how many amendments do we have on this conference report?
About eight.
Eight? Right. Did any of them actually get vetted as bills?
Yes. Senator, on your desk, I have a spreadsheet, and most of those are in bills.
Were they original bills before they became amendments?
Yes.
And did any of them, did they hear any of those bills in committee?
Yes. I don't think there's a single thing on it that I talked about on this sheet that has not had a committee hearing and has been vetted in both bodies. Most of these things we have discussed on the floor of the Senate.
Now, what was Amendment 3 about?
Amendment 3, dealing with the bed and breakfast property tax.
And what was the original fiscal note on that one?
I do not know the original fiscal note. I can tell you that I can look through our current fiscal note and try to tell you what it is, but it's probably zero to the state of Missouri because of what's going on right now in the bed and breakfast. This is a representative, I believe, Representative Butler's situation. So this is the bed and breakfasts like are four or less, and what they're doing is they're moving them over to the commercial side, which would raise the cost of property tax for these small bed and breakfasts. And so what he's saying, hey, these are mom
and pop
shops.
Raise the property taxes to what?
Say again?
How much would the property taxes increase?
I don't know, Senator. I just know that it would increase the property tax significantly because your residential is obviously one of your lower amount of property taxes you would pay. And so if you move it into the commercial side, because if it is a commercial building, you would pay more in property taxes. They're just saying, hey, these are mom and pop shops. They're four beds or less, I believe. And so we're not talking these big elaborate locations. They're mostly residential homes that they're opening up because they've kept them nice and they open them up to the bed and breakfast type of setting.
Do you know if there were any opposition to it in committee?
No, not that I know of.
You don't know? Amendment 5.
Yes.
Give me some details on Amendment 5.
Amendment 5 is the TDD language that we passed out of here last year primarily. The governor vetoed it, and it had some immunity language in it.
Why did the governor veto?
Because of the immunity language that was put into the bill last year.
That's now out?
That is now out.
Okay. And that also had a hearing as well. Is that true to say?
Yes. It was a House bill. It's actually on our calendar for us to debate. It's the bill that I'm carrying, so it's all the way to the point where we're about ready to get it finished. We haven't had time to get it on the floor of the Senate. So it's been through the entire House, through the entire Senate, up to the point where we haven't got it on the floor to debate it this year in a bill form. And I believe opposition.
It's 12 amendments on here. Is that correct?
No.
It says...
So we had about 20 amendments added to this bill.
Amendment 12?
There's no Amendment 12 that made it on this bill. There might have been Amendment 12 on that was added to it over there, but when we went to conference, we took 12 off.
And what was it that you took out?
I don't have the list of things that aren't on the bill
now. Tell me what was it that came out of the bill?
In conference?
Yeah, what came out of it?
Get it. I've got my staff running up to get the list that we pulled out. I did not bring that list, so he's getting that. But I don't know what's Amendment 12. You have that in front of you? I can tell you.
I just have the original conference report. But I would love to know what actually came out because I don't want...
He's getting it.
I want to be clear as to what we're taking out and why we felt the need to take it out. Of this particular piece of legislation. And before I sit down, the amendment, Amendment 5.
Okay. The TDD amendment?
Why did you keep that in there?
Because it's non-controversial. The fiscal note is minimal. It's been through the process. It's been vetted by both bodies in committee. It's something that we're trying to get done dealing with taxes. And that I tried to do with this one, this conference committee report, is try to get some of the smaller stuff that didn't have a lot of fiscal note, but yet would be able to help people in their districts. TDDs, right now, there's no set procedure. So what happens is you can set up a transportation district, and then nobody knows it's out there. So one of the things that's in this bill is to require them to notify the state auditor's office, which is required to audit them. And
and the auditor's office,
they're on board. They worked with the representative to craft this language, and there's some teeth in it now, too, so that if you don't file your report, then the Department of Revenue can notify those TDDs that the report hasn't been filed, and they have 30 days to file their annual report. If they don't file it in 30 days, there's a small fine of $500 if they don't do that. But the intent is to get them to file the report so the auditor can see it and have a tracking these transportation. I mean, they're taxes, and
that's
we need to be watching.
Like that.
Huh?
I like that. That's pretty good.
Okay. So you wanted to know about Senate 12.
Yeah, I wanted to know about the actual amendments or provisions that...
Okay, so House Amendment 12 dealt with the Department of Labor, and when we found out that that was going to cost a significant amount of money because the language hadn't been vetted and it was going to violate something with the federal law, it was going to be a significant amount of cost. That's why it was pulled.
Okay.
And like I said, I tried to keep it non-controversial in here, nothing that we would have any major problems with. So we can get some of these smaller things taken care of for various representatives and senators.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I would like to inquire the senator from St. Louis.
The 24th. Does the senator from the 24th yield for inquiry?
I do.
If she yields, you may inquire.
Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I noticed that you signed the conference report.
I did.
And so you are satisfied with many of the provisions that were added to the conference report. Did you have any concerns with any of the, you know, amendments that came out?
Well, actually, my concern is really just with one that stayed in. But I think overall, not trying to make the perfect be the enemy of the good, I went ahead and signed one of the amendments that stayed in was this dependency exemption for stillbirths. And again, I just think that's bad public policy. You know, sadly, a lot of people in their lives lose loved ones, and it's hardest of all when someone loses a child. And I know it's difficult when someone, I imagine, when a stillbirth occurs. But to give an exemption, a tax exemption for that stillbirth doesn't make sense to me unless the goal at the end of the day is to establish personhood, which is a different issue. And I think
excuse me, Senator, I can barely hear you.
Really? I'm sorry.
Bait can be heard.
Thank you, Mr. President.
So I have concerns with that particular amendment being left in the legislation, but as I said, you know, trying not to make the perfect the enemy of the good. I signed the conference report. I think that the senator sponsoring this legislation worked really hard to try to get it in a format that people could agree to.
Yeah. So you had a low heartburn, but not to the extent where you didn't want to sign the conference
report. Right. I have a little heartburn, but overall, I think that what was left in this conference committee report is pretty much good public policy. Not all of it, but a good deal of it, a great deal of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I would like to inquire the senator from the second.
Does the senator from the second yield for inquiry?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, I noticed that you're on the conference, you was on the conference committee as well.
Yes.
So you're basically satisfied with what was in and what was out, what came out of the conference report?
Yes, I am. I would agree with the senator for the 24th that overall it's we have a lot of good things in here, and I think it's good public policy.
Okay. And the amendment, was that amendment 7? I don't have what that
amendment.
What was amendment 7?
You know, amendment 7, shortening time for interest on tax refunds to accrue. I'm not actually sure of the details of that one. It looks like that was included in Senate Bill 350.
Did that bill
from the
pass?
Senator,
350 pass?
I am not 100% sure. That was sponsored by the senator from Boone, so
okay.
I'm sure he could tell us.
Okay. So, but you didn't have any concerns with
it? No, I didn't.
Not even with what came out of it?
No, I think there were some really good things here that that corrected some injustices in our tax code, and I think
what were those injustices?
Well, you know, one thing I noticed that was in there that I think is important is the way that property was valued, low income housing tax credit. Housing was valued.
What happened with that?
Well, that had to do with the fact that some assessors were really dramatically increasing the assessments and the tax bills for some of the low-income property developers. They were not taking an income approach to it, and they were not taking into account the fact that rents were reduced on those properties. And some of these folks, including some in my own district, their tax bills were doubling in just 1 year.
Hmm.
So I think that was number six from Representative Rowden. So I think, you know, the school supplies holiday, good thing. I think it's overall good public policy.
Okay. All right. Do you support low income tax credits?
Well, you know, you got to look at case basis. I think overall, I would say that we have a tax credit problem here in Missouri. The amount of tax credits we issue. But,
well, you know, low-income tax credits, you know, I'm a firm believer that they work, you know, and St. Louis.
Well, certainly they do get some projects done that wouldn't be done otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, St. Louis, we have been able to revitalize so many neighborhoods with low-income tax credits, from the VO neighborhood to Tower Grove and
some of the, of course,
even,
historical.
Even on Grand, I don't know, we had the opportunity. As a result of the tax credits, now we have this big brothers, big sisters facility on Grand right down the street from the Fox. And I can tell you that for decades, it used to be Woodworks.
Right.
And for decades, it was just vacant and abandoned. And now it's lively, it's bright. I mean, and they're doing great things out of the big brothers, big sisters facility there.
Right.
So tax credits for me works pretty well.
Right. Yeah, and then in your district, I'm sure a lot are also historical preservation tax credits too.
And even downtown, you know, Washington was vacant for so long. Now, you know, we have those beautiful lofts down there, and people are spending more and they're hanging out down there more. But anyway. We don't want to talk about tax.
Senator, my crack staff has informed me that the Senate Bill 350 was heard and voted to pass in Ways and Means, and that provision is that it requires the Department of Revenue to refund tax refunds within 45 days, and after that, to pay interest. So that was amendment, what did we say, that was three?
Well, three or four. It was one or the other.
That's
a provision in this bill that I.
Yeah, I think that was. Yeah, now that once my staff refreshed my memory, I remember hearing that one.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Senator.
Mr. President, I would like to inquire the senator from the 27th.
Does the senator from Cape Girardeau yield for inquiry?
I do.
He yields. You may inquire.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to touch base with you. I know that noticed that you were on the conference committee.
Yes.
And I just wanted to see get your take on some of the amendments that was added and some of the amendments that they actually excluded. How do you feel about the amendments that were added?
I feel.
Are you satisfied?
I signed it because I agreed with the conference committee report, and I know it had a thorough vetting and a lot of discussion, and at the end of the day, I thought it was a good bill to send to the governor.
I don't know. Do you have the amendment that they offered, Amendment 8? I don't have that amendment.
I don't have that in front of me. What was Amendment 8?
Amendment 8? You don't know? You don't remember what? You don't? Do you remember what Amendment 8?
No, I don't remember. What was number 8 amendment? What did that deal with?
Okay, but you didn't have a problem with the overall conference report.
I didn't.
Okay, thank you. Senator, thank you very much. I would like to inquire the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th. I do not see in the chamber. Is the senator from the 13th available?
I'll resend that request. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Senator from the 1st.
Fire the senator from the 24th, Mr. President.
Does the senator from the 24th yield? Proceed.
Well, the senator from the 5th spotted an issue that I agree it's important that we discuss. And I appreciate the answers that you gave her on the provision on page 27, which is language that would be starting this year, where you have a certificate of birth resulting in a stillbirth, that the grieving people who had hoped to be parents would have a taxable exemption as if the stillborn child had been a member of their household. And I know we discussed this on a separate, I think we discussed the underlying bill in committee. I think it was the Health and Veterans Committee that you and I both serve on.
Right.
If memory serves, it was the senator from the 2nd who had that bill, but I could stand corrected. It might be the senator from Barton.
I believe it's a senator from Barton.
On the bill to provide a tax credit in cases of stillbirths. So I'll tell you, I've been through this conference report, which I think is important to do. I think much of it is pretty straightforward. This is probably the one provision that does give me, just based on the conversation in committee, I think as recently as last week, and some of the concerns that you raised, I would say if there is a question as to what I do with this bill when we call the roll, it's this provision that causes me to ask the question, what I do with this bill when we call the roll. But let me preface that by saying I certainly have all the sympathy in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
To folks who are grieving in cases of a stillbirth. And I appreciate your approach in signing the conference report. You used the words, which I think not enough people say enough of the time in this process, that you didn't want to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I respect that. I nonetheless want to get... I want to hear your concerns with that language, and frankly, I want to give the senator who sponsored the underlying bill the opportunity to address that before I decide, frankly, what I want to do with this when we call the roll. So would you mind just, and I appreciate that for you, you didn't want to have this provision rise to the level of keeping your signature off the conference report, and I respect that, but Could you please refresh my recollection? It's only been a week, but it's been a long week.
Right.
Could you remind me sort of what your concerns were there?
Well, yes, I'll be happy to do that. And, you know, I think that certainly I agree with you, and I think we're all probably in agreement that it's a terrible tragedy for a family who is hopeful about bringing a new baby into the world to have that baby be stillborn and, you know, not have that, and have the grief that that family goes through at that point in time. But all of us, sadly, all of us will lose family members, and there's nothing more heartbreaking, I don't think, than when, you know, people in a family lose the generation that's following them. Because that just doesn't feel like the natural order of things.
Right.
So I understand the concern for those families. But that said, if a family loses, when the senator from Barton and I spoke about this on the Senate floor, I said, you know, I could understand if you were concerned about getting a family counseling or, you know, helping them to move past that grief, and you wanted to look at what kind of public policy would help there. And I don't want to, and I know the senator from Barton will have an opportunity to talk about this, but what I heard him say was, well, perhaps that those dollars saved could be used in that way. And then my question is, well, if that is perhaps the intent, then what about the family who loses, and I you know, these thoughts are horrific to me, but their 9-month-old child, you know, you just had a family that came to you with regard to the safe sleep, you know, legislation. What about that family? How is that family? And I know this is not meant to be full compensation for a horrific loss, but how is that family then compensated? How are all the families who lose youngsters for a variety of reasons, including, you know, a young person who is shot and killed? How are those families then compensated? And if counseling is something that I think we need, then I think that we need to talk about that in terms of mental health budget. What I suggested on the floor and what I still believe is that this is really a piece of legislation about establishing personhood and about moving forward from there, recognizing or acknowledging that an unborn child, a child who is not born live, a child perhaps still in the womb, is a person, and that changes certain laws or ideas that we have about perhaps abortion.
We are on the precipice of a very intricate and very sensitive and very controversial notion. So I want to back up for just a minute.
Sure.
To be clear. Your concern with this language is not the fiscal impact. I mean, obviously there would be some fiscal impact.
There would
but
be.
I think it's fair to say that it would be relatively... Let's hope it would be relatively de minimis. We'd love to get through a year where no Missourian qualified for this exemption, but unfortunately, we know that that's probably unlikely. So you're not worried about the tab for this. You're worried about...
No, I don't think it will be a big financial cost to the state.
But you're more concerned, and slippery slope is the wrong word for it, but you're concerned that where do you draw the line, maybe, if you're going to allow... If you're going to provide for an exemption in cases like this, why wouldn't you provide for an exemption in a case where any child passed away, whether it was at birth or after? Is that sort of your...
Yes, it is. And, you know, it is treating the unborn child then in the same way we treat children who are born whose families do have tax exemptions.
Well,
so.
And I'll tell you, I mean, what we don't have before us the amendment that says, look, if you have a child who dies of an unfortunate accident during the year, what the exemption status is. And I'll off the top of my head, I don't know what the exemption status is. Maybe there already is one. I don't know.
I don't know,
maybe
but
the Senator from Barton knows. I may ask him. But what I would say is I don't know that I'd be opposed to that. But your concern is more sort of the legal issue. I guess what I would say to you about that, though, given the state of Missouri law, among other things, on where life begins, whether or not we believe that that's consistent with certain United States Supreme Court precedent. Some may not.
Right.
And, of course, plenty of people disagree with that precedent.
Sure.
I'm not certain that this language taken alone necessarily impacts the face of Missouri law on that question. But I understand your concern that it is certainly... You know, another ounce on the scale leaning in one direction. Is that your
right.
is that what you're saying?
That is absolutely my concern, and that yes, and that we are giving statutory voice to a viewpoint that may be very different than mine, and it may be leading us down that path.
Sure.
Yes.
Well, I understand your concern with that. I appreciate your taking the time to explain it to me. I am going to go ahead and inquire of the senator who offered that language once he. It would appear as though there's a conversation going on right now with the handler, so I don't want to interrupt that. So, big Mother's Day plans?
Well, yes, we will have brunch with my family, including my mother, my husband, of course, and I will be in touch with his mother, who lives in Kansas City, and. You know, I'm sure my kids, I don't think they're coming in town, but I will certainly be hearing from them and the whole family gets together. How about you?
You know, I stopped by the post office on my way here on Monday and sent my mother her Mother's Day salutations. And it would look as though we might have an opportunity to move our inquiry to the other side of this issue. So, Senator,
all right.
thank you for the inquiry.
Further discussion. I'm sorry.
I'm going to inquire the senator from Barton.
I apologize. Senator from the first.
Yeah, Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from Barton?
Senator from Barton, do you yield? Proceed.
Morning, Senator.
Senator, thank you. I'll just take the moment. My, I regret if it was unclear that I was intending to continue my inquiry and continue to hold the floor. There was another member seeking recognition, and if I just did something that was procedurally incorrect, I have every confidence we'll get that ironed out quickly. I'm just saying that by way to the senator in question.
You just didn't speak up real quickly.
That's well, I thought I'd made it clear that I was moving to you, but apparently I didn't. So my regrets to any other member of the body for any inconvenience in that regard. Senator, you heard my last inquiry, the senator from the 24th, on language that's in this conference report that I believe is from a bill that you have handled in the Senate and I think presented to the Health and Veterans Committee within the last week or two. Maybe it was longer ago than that. Maybe we had the floor discussion.
Well, actually, this bill and an identical one to it by the senator from Buchanan were presented to, I don't even remember which committee it was, Senator. I'd have to look back at my notes, but... and his bill was the one voted out unanimously. I think it was unanimously. They were the provisions were the same, and so
you have this legislation too.
Yes.
So you're certainly able to speak to the to the proponent side of the topic. So I think you heard the views expressed by the senator from the 24th, and I just wanted to get your view.
Right, and let me just give you some of the numbers, just so you at least should know what the impact is, and then I can explain to you the thinking process. Numbers-wise, it still stays with a $1,200 exemption. It's not a tax credit. It's a $1,200 exemption, which is your exemption for every live birth child.
Yeah, and at 6%, that would be less than $100.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So, I mean, and that's why people would a whole lot rather have their babies on the December 31st than on January 1st. But it doesn't always work out that way.
My son was born on January 11th, no comment.
That's right. So you understand, Senator. Yeah.
Actually, he was...
Oh, by the
way,
happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you.
I offer you a happy
birthday. You know, my son was born the day before our current governor was sworn in.
Is that right?
And so I missed the inauguration and had to extend my regrets, but I think it was understandable that I was not in attendance.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Well, and I think you share a birthday with a senator from the 23rd, don't you?
I think he may be. His is today. Mine was yesterday.
Oh, yours was yesterday.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're
a day off on yours. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, you're not good. All right. No, I appreciate the sentiment.
Senator. You bet. And then the five-year average for the number of stillbirths in Missouri has been about 414 per year. I heard your discussion with the senator from the 24th. I don't know how many living children we lose in that time period. We didn't look at that, but that's the average. And frankly, I was a little bit shocked. I didn't realize we would have that many stillbirths in Missouri. That's just one state.
It's terrible.
It is, and you know, for the families involved, we actually lost three children in the womb ourselves, and so you do.
Oh,
it's,
sorry.
It's not quite the same as
I had no
having,
idea.
As holding a baby and then losing it, but it's still a loss, and it is hard. But the fiscal note for year one was $67,584. That's $30,000 that's estimated for the exemption if you use that 414 number.
Right.
It's $37,584 for the cost for DOR to redesign their system so that it can take it out.
And that's a one-time cost.
That's a one-time cost.
Yeah.
So ongoing should be around $30,000. It just simply acknowledges that in many cases the cost if you set aside the emotional cost, I mean, you can't. That's not what we're dealing with here. But if you just deal with the fiscal impact, many times the cost of a stillbirth is higher than the cost of a live birth. And so this just simply acknowledges that at least for a year, that family is probably going to incur a pretty significant financial hit that we acknowledge in a live birth because it's a cost that we know is associated with the child, feeding and housing and caring for the child. This just recognizes that even in a stillbirth, there's still a significant cost, at least for 1 year.
Yeah, and frankly, a cost that likely exceeds the benefit of the exemption. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're not, folks aren't coming out ahead here. They're coming out less far behind.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate that notion. I really do. I'll tell you that, I think in terms of the legal implications, I would say they're probably not zero, but I don't think they're a ton. That is something I understand the Senator from the 24th concern, and I know that there's not consensus in our state or in this chamber on some of the legal implications or what the legal implications should be or what we would want them to be.
Right.
I just don't know that it's enough. I'm just not confident that it's enough for me to move from a yes to a no on this conference report. That said, there are a couple of other provisions in here that I have a few questions about, but I appreciate your taking the time to visit with me.
Absolutely.
On this provision.
Absolutely.
Mr. President?
Senator from the first.
I inquire relatively briefly from the senator, or of the senator from the eighth.
Senator from the eighth, do you yield? Proceed.
Senator, I just have two quick questions for you. On page 12 of the conference report, we have some assessment language.
Yes.
Do you happen to recall who in the chamber would have, if that's reflective of a Senate bill, could you tell me if you know whose bill that is?
It was a House Bill 616.
Okay.
With a Senate substitute that was passed out. And I don't know who carried. I'm being told I did.
Oh. Well, long story short, this concept came from the House.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
and
I'm
so,
going to. Go ahead.
The language is there because obviously, if your income is limited, they want to make sure that the property taxes don't raise based on the value of the property. So if you have a situation where you're limited in what you could charge on rent, they want to make sure that the property taxes are assessed based on your monthly
right.
income.
My question, and it is now directed to you, I was going to inquire whoever's language that was, but you're the senator.
House Bill 616 that we passed about 3 or 4 nights ago. I don't
right. know. Yeah. And again, here we are. Not quite 8 calendar days to go, and this is a provision that I'm not confident would it have been in the Senate committee substitute?
Yes.
Okay, so it at least has been through the body in that form. I don't recall any previous discussion, though, of what we think the local school revenue implications might be for this, if any.
I don't know that anybody is not already using this method for them.
Okay.
I don't think it's dramatic. I don't think it's going to impact the schools greatly.
Well, and I would acknowledge, too, there are going to be some cases where switching to the income approach might actually yield a higher assessment, so it could actually be revenue positive.
Right.
It could be revenue negative, but, you know, there's only so much of the state's, there's only so much assessed property in the state that fits the description in this language, so it's hard for me to imagine that it would be a gargantuan impact, but all it takes is one major parcel in one smaller school district, and it could be a relatively bigger swing for that district.
If the question is if you're limiting how much they can charge, is it really fair to say that the property value has increased so much that now you see where I'm coming from?
Oh, sure.
I mean,
sure.
There's a couple ways to calculate it.
Yeah.
We're just saying that if you're limiting what I can charge, then let's do it under the income model.
If the income is constant and or not within the discretion of the landowner,
right.
Is it fair to eat into their revenue stream given that the income level is restricted? And I do get that. And you can make an argument that bricks and mortar and the dirt is worth more and the value of the dirt increases over time. But the argument is that the revenue that's coming out of that is limited, therefore we ought to be confined to the income approach in these instances. And I grasp that concept, and I think that's fair. The only other question that I think I have for you, and maybe the only other question I have for any member of the body on this bill, on this conference report, the language on page 34, and this is the Higher Education Savings Plan account language that's in the bill.
Yes, this is the most account. So
yeah, is that the senator from the 15th legislation?
I believe so, but I mean, basically what you're doing is allowing them to take their refund and put it into a most account, which is not allowed right now.
Very good. Senator, thank you, and I'll just extend my regrets to the senator from the 14th, who I believe has been waiting for recognition for some time. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th.
Yes, Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, I don't think I have anything specific to St. Louis in here.
I know, and that's what I was going to stand up on, but I had plenty of time to go through it, and I was initially just going to say thank you for not having any St. Louis County stuff in it. But I wanted to pick up from where the Senator from the 1st was, and I am concerned about if you go to page 13, line 16 through 20, the federal and state tax credits or other subsidies shall not be used when calculating the capitalization rate. And then when you go over to the fiscal note for the conference committee report, looking at section 137.076, it seems as though, you know, oversight hasn't gotten, has received no responses to this provision and assumes this provision would, in general, lead to an unknown reduction in the assessed valuation of real properties. Now, the reason why I'm concerned about that is because I had my school board meeting committee, the finance committee, this morning, and we were literally looking at our fund balance this year and our fund balance through the year 2020 by school year. And so right now, I'm really excited because our fund balance is over 15%, which is the suggested amount. We have been making, our finance committee on the school board made the determination that we were going to try to do an early retirement for teachers, so we know going into the 15-16 school year that our fund balance is going to go slightly down because we're spending about $1 million leaving our general revenue, which is about $40 million per school year. What I'm concerned about, what we were discussing this morning on the school board for our finance committee is the fact that we're going to have to hold off a couple of years until we go to the voters and ask for an increase. Here's the problem. 76-74% of our revenue comes from the local tax base. And I regrettably hate saying this yet again, but it looks as though looking at oversight's what they wrote on this page, page 9, seems as though they didn't finish their job, which is a problem we've had all session long. And it doesn't even matter what bill it is. We have had problems with oversight and these fiscal notes. But because they did not respond or finish the job, I am greatly concerned. So we are getting from the state, we are getting a literal reduction this year in our school district. And we know that we can't go back to the voters and get money until or ask for an increase until we have other things in place, such as growth in our student outcome and all of that. So I'm concerned if we are reducing the assessments, the value of the assessments, that we are going to be giving less or getting less from our local community. And I just kind of don't think that's right. I don't think it's fair for us having 76% of our local revenue going into our school district. We already know that we are going to have a reduction in our fund balance moving forward because of some of the decisions that we chose to make. But we are really conservative. Our CFO is really conservative. In fact, when we were looking at our calculations this morning, one of the things that Scott was saying is that we don't count because we don't know if we're going to get money from the transfer students. We don't know if we're actually going to get that. So like this year, we were supposed to get $700,000. And 2 years ago, it was hard to get that money recouped. But right now, they are on schedule. But what happens? None of us know what's going to happen down the line, especially after MCIV 5. So for whoever in this chamber cares about the assessed valuation and has the majority of their revenue going into their school districts, from the local tax base, you should be greatly concerned about the reduction from the local tax base for the school district. And if you are trying to do an increase, a bond issue perhaps, or a tax levy, because a lot of people are wanting to increase tax levies, but I don't think you should do that. And I think the taxpayers are right in the sense because they want to see greater outcomes. So I have a problem with this because we are already getting less from the state. And that is a huge concern. We're, one, already getting less from the state. Two, we're as conservative as can be, and to my liking, because, you know, I am conservative on that side. But I just don't think that this is right. This language, especially starting on line 16, I don't think that's right. Especially when we're not getting as, and that goes for formula districts as well. But, again, our assessment rate, our fund balance is at 15%. Next year, it's at 13% because we are doing an early retirement for 33 teachers, some of which need to go, and we chose to do that. But as we're moving on, if this is reducing the 76% of the revenue that comes from the local tax base, this will negatively impact us. And furthermore, I just really want to go back and talk about this fiscal note. They didn't finish the job. This is a problem for everybody. This is a problem for everybody in this room when we don't get the proper information from fiscal oversight. They did not complete the job. So as we are moving forward, no one really knows how these four lines are going to negatively impact their school districts. No one knows that, and that's a problem, Senator.
I understand where you're coming from, and I think the fiscal oversight guys have a lot on their plate, especially the last couple of weeks.
I know, but it's not an excuse.
I hear you.
But see, here's my problem. When the senator from the second, I think, has language as well that reduces the amount of money that goes into the revenue for school districts, there are other bills that reduce the amount of money that go into the general revenue for local school districts. If we have five bills like that, which we may, I know of two right now, but if we have five bills like that, we're going to be in a really difficult situation. And I am just asking, you know, from our own perspective, as we are trying to do a better job in educating our children, we have to be cognizant of this, that multiple bills will negatively impact the amount of revenue going into our schools. Do you understand?
You know, one of my concerns was House Bill 42 and that cost it had and the impact
yes.
it's going to have.
And it was wrong. That fiscal note was wrong, too. It was wrong. And I think on the floor, I did a personal privilege on that one and talked about how it was wrong. But you know what? It could be your bill, and I'm not talking about your whole bill. But you know, when I'm going to stand up, I'm going to go directly to lines, and I'm going to be looking at this. So this is not just me trying to stall time. You know how I care about education, and
right.
you know what it means to me. And I do know, because I sit on the fiscal or the finance committee on my school board, and just this morning we were talking about where we are going to be with our fund balance. And it's critical because the state says that we are supposed to have a certain amount in our fund balance. If the state is saying, mandating that you're supposed to have a certain amount in your fund balance, and then there are multiple bills that are taking money away from your fund balance, then what are we supposed to do? We're not going to get any more money from the state. We're not going to get any more money from the state, and I'm not asking for more money from the state at all. But what I'm saying is that you are this language right here is taking away the money that we need to educate our schools, to update our buildings. It also has an impact on our capital improvement projects that we have.
Well, so when I put together this substitute, I was looking for legislation that had been through both bodies and voted on. This was voted on in this body. It was 616 just the other day, and I think it had a unanimous vote.
You know what, and I may have voted for it, but you know what, every day is an opportunity to do better. And I wrote that down. I'm so glad I wrote that down when I was in college. Every day is an opportunity to do better. So in this sense, every day is a better opportunity to do better. And I'm just saying that this language right here, along with the senator from the second, he has language, I think, in 299 or something like that. All that is money being taken away from our school districts that have an enormous amount of revenue that comes from the local tax base. And I think everyone in this room should be concerned about that. I just do. I mean, so who did you tell the senator from the first who that came from?
That 616, I don't know who the House member was. I carried it on the floor of the Senate.
What county are they from?
Who?
Whoever put in this language, what county are they from?
I don't know who it was.
Here's what I'm saying. We make special arrangements for several different bills. Do you need to talk? We sometimes, rural areas, Senate Bill 5, a great example, there was a different amount for rural Missouri than for St. Louis County and Jackson County. We did an exemption. There are multiple bills where we do exemptions. What I'm saying, again, is for the schools that we're trying to help that are really poor, that are struggling and depend on the local tax base, this negatively impacts it. And I don't know if that representative knew what he or she was doing when they added this language on. You know, at what point?
I think that they were looking at the fact that if you have a limited amount of money that you can come in, making sure that the property taxes weren't going to go towards the other model of how you calculate property taxes. And so they were trying to weigh those odds based on property taxes going up.
Our property taxes are not in our school district. That's what we talked about this morning in the finance committee. And I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I didn't talk about this. And at some point in time, we're going to have to just say no and stop doing this, because the more and more you take away from us, the harder it's going to be to educate our children. And if the community doesn't see a growth model among these struggling students, if they don't see the growth, which some of it may be critical needs, having the capital improvements. I mean, right now, we can't even redo our third floor at our high school. We're doing the first and second floor, but we can't do the third floor at the high school. Luckily, we're putting money into our library at the high school, and that's going to be able to help us out, because our kids need to be going to libraries. I'm a huge proponent for library investment, but because we don't have enough in our capital improvements, we can't do the third floor, and we're not going to be able to move on seriously and ask for more money if we can't even show our constituents and our taxpayers that we have something good that's going on. So, you know, at some point, really, Senator, at some point, we are going to have to say stop. Or we're going to have to say, hey, like I said when we were dealing with the regional authorities, which you didn't like.
Absolutely.
You know, I said, well, let's take out these.
I voiced my opinion, and then I sat down and voted no.
Yes, I know. But you know, Senator, this is the second time I'm saying this. You know, when I stand up,
I understand. You have a passion, and I understand your passion. And I think we all should be concerned about our schools and the funding that goes to our schools.
Now, all of them. But again, I want to reiterate this problem that we have right here in oversight. Oversight needs to do a better job. They need to do a better job. This state is paying for one of the authorities that helps us move legislation along. And if it's incomplete work, it should be rated as an incomplete. And now we are standing here voting on a conference committee, and we have incomplete work. And for anyone, whether they're children or adults, we cannot afford to have incomplete work done, period. We cannot afford to do that, because it's going to disserve our entire state, regardless of what that legislation may be, regardless of who it helps or who it hurts. We should know what the truth is when it comes to fiscal concerns and these reports we get back. This fiscal note is incomplete. It's one paragraph. Here's the other thing about it. It's going to impact negatively the blind pension fund. You know? I mean, are we just willing to do that? Anyway, thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 7th, for what purpose do you rise?
Part of the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Briefly.
Senator, I don't serve on Ways and Means, so I haven't been educated on this piece of legislation. So I'd like to start at the beginning and kind of work through it a little bit so I can understand.
Senator, it's becoming pretty obvious what your caucus is doing here. So at some point, I'm willing to answer questions, but I'm not going to be partaking in the delaying of what's going on. So, I mean, if you have specific questions, I'd be glad to answer it. I have it, but I can go through it piece by piece if that's what we need to do. But, I mean, if you're going to do it and then the Center from the 11 is going to do it, at some point, we're not getting anywhere. If we're just going to stand up and talk about legislation, then you can do that without me.
Okay, well...
I mean, if you have a question, I'd be glad to answer it, but at some point, this delay tactic, I'm going to let you do it on your own.
Well, let's start on page 2, and let's see when you're done answering the questions, and you can sit down. On page 2, section 2, says, notwithstanding any other provision of law to the contrary...
Right, that's the refund requirement. So basically, the situation right now is you have 90 days to get before... We had a situation where there's people getting their tax returns back too late. So this is a provision that says, hey, if you hold it more than 45 days from when you get the tax return, you have to start paying the interest. That's what that does.
Who has to start paying the interest?
The Department of Revenue, the state of Missouri.
And then the citizen who they held on to the taxes too long will receive the interest in payment.
Correct.
At the same time that they receive...
Yeah, that's put in there. So basically, to try to encourage the Department of Revenue to get those refunds out in a timely manner.
Okay. So we move over to page 3, and it says, for a period of one calendar year following the abolition of the townships...
Right, that's the senator from Andrew's language. He had some situations where the township dissolved, and how do you handle operating of the new organization, and this just gives them a period of time so that they can go to the voters and pass new taxes so that they can fund their new form of government.
So which townships are we talking about? Are we talking about
Senator
specific
from
ones?
Andrew is the one you'd have to talk to about that. That's his legislation.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what it does. I don't know the specifics on the townships.
Okay, I'm going to make a note here to talk to the senator from Andrew about that. Okay. So then we go to page 5, and it looks like the state auditor shall report any violation to the Department of Revenue.
Right, that's the TDD language that is in 777 that we passed out primarily last year that the governor vetoed because of immunity language that was corrected. This situation right now, basically the state auditor wants the TDDs to report to them that they have a TDD, and then they have to file annually. If they don't file annually, they can notify the Department of Revenue, which will then notify the TDD that they're in violation of filing, and there's a small fine if they don't file within 30 days of being notified. So that's that
language. 2% of that small fine gets retained?
2% by the Department of Revenue because they're the ones doing the work.
And TDD is Tax District?
Transportation Development District.
Transportation Development District, okay. And those are already authorized in law right now?
Yeah, yes. This is just kind of trying to make sure we track them and that the auditor's requirement to audit them.
And whose language was this?
Representative Faust.
Okay,
and the state auditor's office. They work together.
Okay, anybody in the Senate file this?
No.
Do we have a hearing on this in the Senate?
Yes, it's already, the bill's on the calendar for us to debate.
Okay, and is that's the entire section on through page 6?
Correct.
And so basically we're saying that any transportation development district would potentially have an audit done of it to make sure they're using the money correctly?
Okay, you audit state government to make sure that they're functioning properly and within the statutes and make sure the money is being properly recorded.
Do we know what it would look like if they weren't? I mean, how would you take what would a TDD be doing improperly that would trigger an auditor to say you've done something wrong where you're going to get fined?
Senator, that's beyond my scope. I mean, I'm just trying to tell you what the bill does. I don't know what the auditor actually specifically looks into, and I couldn't tell you those examples.
And who do you think would be the best person in this chamber to talk about this section with?
I can answer what the section does.
Well, I want to learn a little more about the transportation development districts specifically, and because we just did the municipal court reform bill,
mm-hmm.
and in there we had standards for municipal court reforms, and by the end of it, I was understanding what would be a violation of those standards and what it would look like if they had cause for someone to file an affidavit with the attorney general and then have someone step in and say you're doing something wrong.
The state auditor audits state government, makes sure that they're running by the statutes. I don't have all the statutes that that I memorized on how these TDDs are operating. They would, the auditor would go in, look at those statutes to make sure they're functioning properly, make sure that the minutes are being filed properly, that the finances are not, somebody's not embezzling money, somebody's not, you know, crony capitalism giving their contracts to their friends and those kind of things. That's what the state auditor is going to do. Now, like I just said, I can't get into the specifics because I don't, I'm not at the state auditor's office.
No, I understand.
I'm sure I'd be glad to go see if the state auditor's office is around. He's in the upper gallery. He'd be probably glad to talk to you on the side gallery if you want to know a whole bunch more about the state auditor's
office. Well, I'm not worried about the state auditor's office. I'm worried about the transportation development districts. It says here, upon notification from the state auditor's office that a transportation development district failed to timely submit a copy of the annual financial statement. Okay, that's pretty clear.
Right. I mentioned that already.
The Department of Revenue shall notify the district by certified mail that a statement has not been received and that the district may be subject to a fine not to exceed $500 a day. How did we come to $500 a day? Was that a proportional difference to what they would do for operational expenses? Or why $500 a day? Why not $50 a day? Why not $5,000
a day? The auditor's office is telling me that's existing law.
That's existing law, okay? So any transportation development district organized under this section having gross revenues of less than $1,000 annually shall not be subject to the fine authorized in the section. So basically we're saying,
if you're small, that $500 is pretty significant to you. You can be waived.
What would be, what are the sizes of these TDDs? Are we talking
they
about
vary.
Cities?
Senator, they vary from very small to very large. I mean, you could have one for a small community that is very, very small for a few things, and then you can get them to be very, very large for bigger cities. So, I mean, it's going to vary. That's why that language is in there.
Okay. So then we come over to page 7, and it says, for the purpose of this section, the term promptly shall mean within 2 business days. Is that current statute, or is that something that we're adding in that's obviously it's underlined, so it's not in statute, but what?
I think that we wanted to define promptly so that your definition is not different than the Department of Revenues or the state auditors, so everybody understands what the promptly means in the statute.
Now we get down to residential property, and then we're adding something in here that would deal with bed and breakfast inns.
That came from the Democrat Representative Butler from the House.
Butler. Okay, anybody file it in the Senate?
Nope.
Did they have a hearing in the Senate? Was it on any of their bill as a part of an omnibus package that went through a hearing?
It was not. That was one of the ones that I tried to help out on both sides of the aisle and tried to. It's reasonable. It's small. It's concise. I think it's something that you and I can debate on the floor right now and understand it. It's not like it's a 5-page amendment that's complicated. I mean, he's just trying to help these bed and breakfasts that are 4 or fewer. So we're not. I mean, so if you had a large house and you wanted to make a bed and breakfast, I mean, should your property taxes go significantly higher because you've decided to rent out a few rooms? And then he's saying no, we shouldn't do these for the small businesses that want to do this or small guys.
So if you
and
have,
I'm just trying to help him.
So if
I
you
can
have
care
a house
less
that,
about this piece of legislation.
If you have a house that has 8 bedrooms in it,
right,
and they only used 4 of them for rental purposes, they would still qualify, or is it a total of? It says 4 or fewer rooms for rent, so I suspect it's not the total number of rooms that's in
right.
the home.
Exactly. If you had an upstairs and a downstairs, and you say, I'm going to rent the 4 bedrooms downstairs, that's good.
What about like duplexes where it might be actually split addresses, where you're in the same, like in the house we live in Jefferson City, it's the same home, but there's a 220 and a 220A.
Are you going to a bed and breakfast that's a duplex?
Well, like I said, in our...
This is a bed and breakfast. This isn't a rental property. And rental property is considered residential anyways.
Okay. We move into...
See, and this is exactly the type of questions I'm frustrated with. I mean, if you had legitimate questions, I'd be glad to answer them. But that's just stalling. And that's just wasting
time
on the floor.
Senator, how is that not a legitimate question to know how many rooms are actually in a home rather than that's going to qualify?
We talked about that. You're asking about duplexes. I appreciate your inquiry. Do you have any specific questions other than going through page by page to try to stall time?
So you're not willing to go through the bill? Are you telling me you're not willing to go through
Senator,
this bill?
Senator, when you ask about duplexes on bed and breakfasts, we're not talking about the bill.
Because
you're
I live in a residence that is a single-family home with 2 separate addresses that is a part of what we consider to be a duplex scenario, even though it's the same home. So I'm wondering if it applies in the same way. Now's the question. I don't think that's out of line. It's a part of the bill. I'm just trying to understand what you're, I mean, this is a pretty big bill you've got before us here. I haven't had a chance to go through it, and so...
Senator, I am more than willing to answer serious questions.
I think
if
that
you have
was
concerns about
question.
Certain parts, I'd be glad to answer them. But if we start talking about duplexes and bed and breakfasts again, I'm done.
Okay, well, we'll try to leave the duplexes out of the next section here. Page 11, 137.018, is using this section. The term merchandise shall include short-term rentals of equipment and other...
I believe that's the senator from Cape's language that we've heard multiple times on this floor.
Okay, so that would be Wallingford? Or
yes. Ooh, yes.
Ooh, I need to be gaveled for that one. Do it.
Senators...
I apologize, Mr. President. Yeah, how rude of me.
And Senator, I don't know. Proceed. That's probably been debated 3 times on the floor of the Senate so far. So, I mean, if you have questions about that, I mean, I would question why we were questioning something that's been debated 3 times if we're not trying to stall.
So what is the merchandise? You figure short-term rentals of equipment. So we're talking about, like, a jackhammer or a snowblower.
So you have these companies that rent equipment and things, but they also sell them.
Okay.
All right. Mr. President,
Senator from the 8th.
I withdraw my motion.
Senator from the 8th has withdrawn his motion. Senator from Newton, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate will recess for 15 minutes.
The Senator from Newton has moved recess for 15 minutes. Seeing no objections, the Senate will recess for 15 minutes. Senate is back in session. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. We'll go to order of business announcements.
Order of business is announcements. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand adjourned till 4 p.m. Monday, May 11, 2015.
You have heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. All in favor shall say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned until 4 p.m. on Monday.